Thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure for me to be able to be here this morning. The subtitle of this conference is Payment Innovation for Banks, Retailers and Government. And so in my remarks this morning, I want to focus on the first two words in this subtitle, that is payment innovation, as well as the closely related concept of competition. I've chosen this focus because over the longer run, it's competition and innovation that are the real key drivers of efficiency in the payment system. Indeed, much of the work of the Payment System Board over the last few years has been focused on creating an environment in which the competitive forces are able to work in the long-run benefits of consumers and on addressing some of the roadblocks that we see as limiting innovation in the Australian payment system. There are three specific topics that I would like to talk about this morning. The first is the recent reforms to the ATM system. The second is the conclusions of last year's review of the card payment system reforms. And the third is the architecture and governance, particularly of Australia's bilateral systems. So the first issue is ATM reforms. As you're no doubt aware, these reforms came into place at the beginning of this month. And as many people in this room know, they had a very long, and I'd have to say a very complicated gestation. But at their heart, these reforms are about improving competition in the provision of ATMs in Australia. They're about increasing transparency to consumers, and they're about ensuring that there are incentives in place to encourage innovation and to ensure the continued widespread availability of ATMs in Australia. As the Reserve Bank has pointed out, and many industry participants have shared this view, the previous arrangements had a number of shortcomings, and I'm going to briefly touch on three of these. The first shortcoming was that the owner of an ATM, unlike almost every other business in the country, was unable to determine the price it charged for consumers using its service. Instead, if a cardholder used an ATM that was not owned by its bank, the owner of the machine would receive a so-called interchange fee, which was around $1, from the bank where the cardholder's account was held. Now, this fee had been fixed for many years, and it was almost impossible for the owner of the ATM to negotiate a higher fee. Now, while this arrangement had served us reasonably well in the past, it had come under considerable strain over recent years. As the cost of providing an ATM withdrawal had risen over time, there was a growing risk that the non-bank owners of ATMs would find it unprofitable to deploy machines. And given that almost one in two ATMs in Australia is owned by companies that are not financial institutions, the end result here would have been a reduction in the number of ATMs in Australia, and this would have ultimately reduced choice and convenience for consumers. The second weakness was a general lack of transparency. While ATM owners did not charge cardholders who used their machines, most cardholders were charged a fee by their own bank, with these fees commonly known as foreign fees or in some cases disloyalty fees. Many banks also charged their customers a foreign fee when they were simply checking the balance of the account before withdrawing the cash. These foreign fees were not displayed at the time of withdrawal, with financial institutions arguing that the messaging system and the way that the pricing of these accounts worked did not allow for this type of transparency. Instead, the fees were just disclosed in the bank's general terms and conditions, and they were debited to the cardholder's account at the end of the month. Understandably, many people said they found these arrangements confusing, and they weren't always sure of what it cost them to use another institution's ATMs. Over recent times, there was also increased questioning of why many banks charged a $2 foreign fee for withdrawals when the interchange fee they paid to the owner of the ATM was only around a dollar. Similarly, people questioned why balance inquiries also often attracted a foreign fee of $2, when the interchange fee on those inquiries was only around, on average, 75 cents. So there was a general lack of transparency, and I think consumers were unhappy with that. The third weakness related to access. Over several years, the Reserve Bank had received numerous complaints from new potential entrants about the difficulties they faced when entering the ATM system. Now, many of these difficulties stem from the bilateral nature of the ATM system. Under these bilateral arrangements, when a new entrant wants to come into the system, it needs to go and knock on the door of every existing participant to get access. And not surprisingly, the existing participants have not always rushed to welcome these potential new entrants, which they've seen as competitors in some cases. I mean, in our view, the recent reforms have addressed each of these weaknesses. They allow ATM owners to set their own prices, with these prices set in a much more competitive environment than was previously the case. The reforms have increased transparency to consumers, and this transparency is a very important part of strengthening the competitive discipline in the system. And the reforms have led to simplified access arrangements, although, as I'll come to in a moment, more needs to be done in this area. Now, while it's still early days, the competitive forces are playing out broadly as we had expected. Initially, two of the large four banks announced they would retain a foreign fee on cash withdrawals, albeit smaller than the one they had previously. And this meant that their customers would have been charged twice, once by the owner of the ATM and once by the bank itself. Now, in our view, this method of charging was really against the spirit of the reforms. And not surprisingly, there was a swift reaction by the customers of the banks who retained the foreign fees. It was so swift that these banks have now abolished these foreign fees. From our view, this is a welcome development, and it's a good example of how competition can work and the power of consumer reaction. The Reserve Bank has made its views on this issue very clear on a number of occasions. While we recognise that the setting of foreign fees is ultimately a matter for each bank, our view is that the system will work better without these fees, and we see the case for them as being weak. This is particularly so now that most banks charge cardholders a fixed monthly fee for operating a transaction account, and now that interchange fees have been abolished, the cost to a bank of its customers using someone else's ATM is almost certainly less than 10 cents a transaction. Under these new arrangements, most ATM owners are charging a $2 withdrawal fee, where one bank, large bank, is charging $1.50, and some owners of ATMs are charging as low as $1. For balance inquiries, there's a broader range of fees, with some charging $2, but we are aware of some examples of ATM owners not charging a fee at all. Where fees are imposed, they are always disclosed before the cardholder proceeds with the transaction, and they don't apply if the transaction is cancelled. Importantly, under these reforms, most cardholders are still able to continue to use their own bank's ATMs without charge, and the new arrangements have given considerable flexibility to smaller institutions in how they set up their arrangements. Some of these smaller institutions have established agreement with large networks to provide fee-free access to their customers, and others have joined with smaller institutions to form free-fee sub-networks. In a few cases, the smaller institutions have readjusted their pricing so that their customers now pay for withdrawals from machines when they previously didn't. But overall, across the entire system, most cardholders are paying no more for ATM transactions than they were previously, and many have the opportunity to pay less. One concern that arose before these reforms were implemented was the possibility that some ATM owners would impose exorbitant fees in locations where there was little competition. To date, these fees have not been borne out, with the major networks having a single price across their entire network or a cap on the price that can be charged within the network. Over the months ahead, the Reserve Bank will continue to monitor developments here very carefully. We've asked ATM owners to provide us with details of their direct charges on a regular basis, including whether charges vary across location. We'll also continue to monitor foreign fees and transaction volumes and to report publicly on these developments. Interestingly, our liaison to date suggests the increased transparency is already having some effect. Some ATM owners have reported to us that the number of withdrawals has declined, with some customers deciding not to proceed with the withdrawal from their machine once they are aware of the full cost of doing so. And we'll get a better picture of how extensive this change has been in a couple of weeks when banks and other ATM owners provide their regular statistics to the Reserve Bank. So in summary, we are confident that these reforms will deliver benefits for consumers. They've strengthened the competitive forces in the system, and they've made fees more transparent. Equally importantly, the industry is now on a much sounder footing than it was previously. Now that ATM owners can determine their own prices within the context of a competitive marketplace, they have an increased incentive to innovate and to grow their networks. And over time, this will deliver both more choice and more convenience to us all. So that's ATMs. The second topic I'd like to talk about are the conclusions of the payment system review that the Reserve Bank undertook last year. Now, at its heart, this review had two central sets of conclusions. The first was that the reforms had improved the competitive environment in the payment system. They had increased transparency. They had improved access. And they had led to better price signals in the payment system for consumers. Now, given these conclusions, the board saw no case at all for allowing the schemes to once again be able to impose no surcharge rules on merchants or to require merchants to accept a scheme's debit card as a condition of accepting its credit card. The second conclusion was that the improvements in the competitive environment had made it possible for the board to now consider stepping back from one specific aspect of the regulations, and that is the regulation of interchange fees. However, the board made it very clear at the time it's only prepared to move in this direction if the industry steps forward to address the ongoing concerns about the competitive forces on these interchange fees. And while these forces have undoubtedly been improved by the various reforms, there remains a significant risk that given the unusual competitive dynamics in place on these fees, that they could move higher if the current regulations were removed and no other changes were made to the existing arrangements. If interchange fees were to rise, the board has made it clear it would view this as undesirable, and it does not accept the idea that higher interchange fees in the credit card system would improve the overall efficiency of the payment system. In releasing these conclusions, the board set out two possible paths that the industry could go down to address its concerns. The first path is to take further steps to strengthen further the competitive pressures in the payment system. In its report, it set out a number of possible steps. These include changes to the governance of the FPOS system to allow it to be a more effective competitor with international card schemes. They also include further modification to the Honour All Cards rule to allow merchants to make acceptance decisions based on the price of the accepting various cards. They include the development of alternate payment methods to provide consumers with greater choices for online payments, and they include greater transparency of scheme fees. The board has sought to avoid being prescriptive in each of these areas, and it's sought to avoid prescribing particular technologies or payment products. What it has tried to do is to focus on the general principle of improving competition, with the specifics to be worked out by the industry. The second possible path is for the international card schemes to commit to limiting their interchange fees to the current level of 0.5%. This type of commitment would clearly address the board's concern that credit card interchange fees could rise if the current regulations were removed. Also, the board flagged the possibility that if the schemes were prepared to make voluntary changes to their rules, then other aspects of the current regulations could also be removed. This is consistent with our overall approach of only using regulation if private sector solutions cannot be found. When these conclusions were released last year, we indicated that we would again assess progress in August this year. If at that time the various concerns had been adequately addressed, the regulation of interchange fees would be lifted, probably in around November. Otherwise, regulation will continue, and we indicated our intention to consider lowering interchange fees even further. As we made clear at the time, our preferred approach is to lift the current regulation of interchange fees, but the board is not prepared to do that unconditionally. So since these conclusions were released, what progress has been made by the industry? Here I think it's fair to say that progress on both paths has been made, but there is a still considerable way to go before we can see the finish line. In terms of the first part, that is further strengthening the competitive forces in the system, the main positive development that I can report is the work that APCA and its members have done on the development of improved governance arrangements for the FPOS system, including the establishment of a formal scheme to oversee the system. Invitations have recently been issued to join the scheme, and it's anticipated that it will be up and running later this year. The draft arrangements look to be a significant improvement on those currently in place. They envisage a board overseeing the FPOS system, with the board having a number of independent directors. If adopted, the scheme could help promote competition within the system and provide a mechanism for decisions to be made in the best interests of the system as a whole, rather than the interests of the individual participants in the system. Whether this promise is delivered will depend upon the details, but at least there's been progress in the right direction here. On a somewhat less positive note, there seems to have been less progress on the development of online payment methods. Over the past couple of years, industry participants had been working through BPAY on the development of a new payment method for online payments. Recently, however, despite considerable progress having been made, it was decided to postpone the project until at least the middle of this year. Our liaison suggests that while some industry participants were very keen for the project to proceed, others were not so keen. Now, without wanting to comment on the merits of the particular proposal, I think this experience is yet another example of how difficult it can be to make progress in this area when all the main stakeholders need to be on board at the same time. And I think this experience might also provide some useful lessons about appropriate governance models for the FPOS system. The bank's recent focus on online payments reflects a couple of considerations. One is that in many situations, consumers wishing to buy goods online have few choices about what payment method they can use. They basically, in most cases, they have to use a card issued by the international schemes. In our view, this lack of choice ultimately reduces competition, and this is likely to become a bigger issue over time as online commerce grows. A second consideration is that fraud rates on online transactions appear to be steadily increasing, and if this trend continues, it could obviously undermine consumer confidence in transacting online, and this would have obvious costs. While the international card schemes have made considerable efforts to address the rise in fraud, more needs to be done here to offer consumers highly secure payment options. As I mentioned a moment ago, another way in which the competitive environment could be improved is for a change to the honour all cards rule to give merchants greater freedom than they currently have to accept and to reject cards. We've discussed this possibility a number of times with the international card schemes, and it's fair to say they're not keen on it. However, if sufficient progress has been made in these other areas by industry participants to allow the bank to step back from the regulation of interchange fees, it would consider the case for using regulation to require the schemes to further modify their honour roll cards rule as part of an overall package, allowing the deregulation of interchange fees. So that's the first path. The second path, as I said, is a voluntary commitment from the schemes to keep interchange fees to no more than current level. And we've had a number of discussions over recent months with the schemes. While these discussions are ongoing, I think it's fair to say that this option has not been ruled out by the schemes. The discussions are focused on the practicalities of any commitment, including the need to ensure that any arrangements are competitively neutral across the schemes, and we hope that we can make further progress here in the months ahead. The final point I'd like to make here is that the bank remains keen to explore both of these paths. Time is marching on, however, and further progress is needed in the near future. Many in the industry, including in this room, have argued for interchange fee regulations to be lifted. And given the changes that have occurred in the competitive landscape since these regulations were introduced, the bank is prepared to consider doing so. It will only move in this direction, though, if industry itself is able to take steps to address the various concerns about the competitive forces acting on interchange fees. We hope that this can be done over the next few months. The third issue that I'd like to briefly touch on is the general architecture and governance of Australia's bilateral systems. Over recent years, you may have noticed that the bank has spoke more often about this issue. This reflects our ongoing concern that the existing arrangements are not particularly conducive to certain types of innovation, and that if changes aren't made, there's a significant risk that Australia will end up with a payment system that is unacceptably behind best practice. Our main focus here has been on the bilateral systems, namely the ATM and FPOS systems, as well as the direct entry system. As many of you will know, the term bilateral is used because in each of these systems, each of the main participants in the system has a direct business or technical link with the other main participants in the system. Now, these bilateral links are really in contrast to almost all payment systems around the world, and they're in contrast to the BPAY and credit card systems in Australia, where institutions join a scheme, and thus they don't need to establish bilateral links with each of the other participants in the system. I think it's fair to say that these bilateral arrangements have generally served us well over many years, and they were clearly useful in the original development of a number of Australia's important payment systems. They are, however, not particularly friendly to new entrants. As I said earlier, the access arrangements that have been put in place for the ATM system as part of the current reforms are a significant improvement over the previous arrangements, but more needs to be done here. In particular, we see a strong case for access to be further streamlined so that a new entrant to the ATM system does not need to go and talk to all the existing players in order to enter the system. And I think the same point could be made for our other bilateral systems. So access is an issue, but perhaps even more importantly, these bilateral systems are characterised by coordination problems, which can slow the pace of innovation. None of these systems has an owner, none of them has a manager, and none of them are overseen by a board or management whose job it is to promote and develop the system. Hardly surprisingly, then, none of them has a particularly good record of innovation. Over the years, various proposals have been floated by industry participants for change, but really there's been limited progress. While this might simply reflect the fact that many of these proposals did not meet the demands of the marketplace. Our sense is that the difficulty of coordinating decisions across institutions has also been a significant factor. The key observation here is that coordination is sometimes required to make progress. Payment systems are networks, and for networks to work, institutions must sometimes cooperate. Of course, they must also compete. So the challenge the industry faces is how to promote competition in areas where it is required, but at the same time, promote coordination where it is required. And this theme is going to be taken up in considerably more detail in a speech tomorrow by Governor Glenn Stevens. Looking forward, I think there is a strong case to re-examine the balance that has been struck in the Australian payment system between competition and cooperation. Financial institutions have been very good at competing on developing payment products using the existing infrastructure, but they have not been as good at cooperating to ensure that that infrastructure is improved over time. Ideally, we would have a world-class payment products delivered on world-class infrastructure. But our fear is that unless the fundamental coordination problems in our networks can be addressed, there's a risk that we will not achieve this outcome. As we've said on a number of occasions, these coordination problems are best solved by industry. However, if this cannot be done, other options will need to be looked at over the months and years ahead. On that note, I'll thank you very much for your time this morning, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Philip. We've got time for a couple of questions, if there's any from the floor.
Thanks, Philip. Karis Palmer from Online Banking Review. You touched on direct charging, and obviously we have seen the bigger banks move to remove foreign fees. There are still a few institutions that are charging those. Will you be monitoring that and looking to regulate if they do not remove those fees?
We'll certainly be monitoring and reporting publicly on developments. The Reserve Bank, though, has no regulatory power to control or limit foreign fees, so that's not something that's on our radar. I think what the experience, though, over the last months does illustrate that is a competition ultimately does work. If institutions are charging what their customers think are too much, the customers have other choices and they will move. So I think the best response here is to allow the competitive pressures to work, and as I said, we don't have regulatory power in this area, and nor do we seek it.
Phil, it's Chris Hamilton from the Australian Payments Clearing Association. Phil, a lot of what you said about competition coordination, as I'm sure you know, is dear to my heart, and I spend a lot of time in the industry amongst a bunch of competitors talking about coordination. I have a sort of a hypothetical for you, and I just wondered if you might comment on this. If the industry did develop a coordinated governance structure which met your principles, whatever they may be, of a good governance structure, and it had the ability to establish an agenda for coordinated action across the industry, and its agenda was different to the Reserve Bank's, how would you react to that? So the question is, would you be prepared to sort of relinquish the steering wheel as long as there was the right governance structure in place?
Well, it's very hard to answer a hypothetical question. The observation I can make, though, is that as I've said a number of times, we view ourselves really as a reluctant regulator. The whole idea underlying the Payment System Regulation Act was the Reserve Bank would only use its powers if industry was unable to solve various issues. And to date, in a number of areas, industry has not been able to solve issues. But that should be the first response. And so we would welcome initiatives by the industry to address these various issues. And we would, again, only use regulation as a last resort if we thought that the basic model or the direction the industry was heading in was not ultimately in the interests of consumers. But we welcome the work that APCA and its members are doing, and we hope that will lead to a better outcome with industry taking the steering wheel and the Reserve Bank just sitting there and observing developments and only really using its regulatory powers if it views that the outcomes are a long way from what's required.